This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, how will U.S. foreign policy shift under a Biden administration? Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. If America first is U.S. President Donald J. Trump's watchword for U.S. foreign policy, then America is back would best describe the approach that former Vice President Joe Biden, the projected winner in the November election, will adopt once he takes office on January 20, 2021. President-elect Joe Biden has said that he wants to reverse President Trump's legacy of retreating from the world stage, undermining traditional alliances, and eschewing multilateral institutions and agreements. President-elect Biden has already committed to rejoining the Paris Climate Accord and the World Health Organization during his first week in office. Mr. Biden also would like to return to the Iran nuclear deal, or JCPOA, a signature foreign policy achievement under the Obama administration, although that may take some more time. In an article published earlier this year entitled Why America Must Lead Again, Rescuing U.S. Foreign Policy After Trump, President-elect Joe Biden said, quote, as president, I will take immediate steps to renew U.S. democracy and alliances, protect the United States' economic future, and once more have America lead the world. This is not a moment for fear. This is the time to tap the strength and audacity that took us to victory in two world wars and brought down the Iron Curtain, close quote. President Trump won plaudits for his tough stance regarding China's unfair trading practices. However, many trade and China experts assert that the Trump administration's unilateral approach to Beijing and use of tariffs has precipitated a costly trade war that has hurt American farmers and consumers more than it has penalized or deterred China. President-elect Biden says, quote, the United States does need to get tough with China. However, he argues that, quote, the most effective way to meet that challenge is to build a united front of U.S. allies and partners to confront China's abusive behaviors and human rights violations, even as we seek to cooperate with Beijing on issues where our interests converge, such as climate change, nonproliferation, and global health security, close quote. Well, for more on how U.S. foreign policy will likely shift in tone and substance under a future Biden administration, we welcome two distinguished analysts. James Goldgeier is Senior Visiting Fellow at the Center on the United States and Europe at the Brookings Institution, based here in Washington. He's also Professor of International Relations at the School of International Service at American University. He previously held the inaugural Library of Congress Chair in U.S.-Russia Relations, a topic we are sure to discuss. And Emma Ashford, she is resident fellow with the New American Engagement Initiative in the Scowcroft Center for Strategy and Security at the Atlantic Council, a policy group also based here in Washington. And her work focuses on questions of grand strategy, international security, and the future of U.S. foreign policy. She has expertise in the politics of Russia, Europe, and the Middle East, all areas we hope to touch on during the program. And both panelists join us via Microsoft Teams. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
James Goldgeier, let me begin with you. You know, notwithstanding President Trump's refusal for the time being to acknowledge the results of the election, leaders from around the world have been calling and congratulating President-elect Biden, from Prime Minister Boris Johnson of the UK to Angela Merkel of Germany, French President Emmanuel Macron, leaders from East and South Asia and beyond. Barring any unforeseen impediments, President-elect Biden will take office on January 20. To continue what I said in the intro, he feels that Mr. Trump has emboldened our adversaries, like Russia's President Vladimir Putin, taken our NATO and transatlantic East Asian and other allies for granted, and says we need to restore alliances and strengthen democracy. How would you characterize, Jim, President-elect Biden's approach to foreign policy? Will it be sort of going back to the Obama-Biden era? Is he likely to maintain any of Trump's policies or approaches, in your view?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. And the instinct is the instinct that American presidents had prior to Donald Trump, which is to be internationalist, to believe in an international order that in which the United States is a leader and previously the leader, with robust international institutions that the United States created after World War II and then dominated. So That's the instinct. The challenge is the world has changed. The United States, you know, is not entitled to lead the world. A lot of countries are wary about what has happened in the United States. So President-elect Biden is going to have a lot of work to do to sort of rebuild a robust internationalist U.S. foreign policy. The easiest place to look for a change is with America's allies, who have been, you know, treated quite shabbily by President Trump, who blamed them for all sorts of ills and treated them, in fact, worse than America's adversaries. And so President-elect Biden can reach out to them and try to rebuild those relationships, and those countries will be eager to reach back to the United States. But other big challenges will continue to be hard to deal with. China will be a challenge. Russia will continue to be difficult to deal with. And whether or not there's a renewal of the Iran nuclear deal, Iran will remain a challenge to deal with.
Turning to you, Emma, to add or subtract to what James just said with respect to the challenges, the world has moved on to some extent. And yet, as we can see by the congratulatory phone calls, many transatlantic allies and those in South Asia are anxious, you know, for America to get back on the world stage and, in a sense, lead. How do you see the challenges ahead for Joe Biden and how he's going to manage them?
I think Jim is absolutely right that a lot has changed, and countries around the world are going to be welcoming to a Biden administration, but also somewhat wary. There is sort of an increasing concern about foreign policy in the United States becoming partisan in nature. This is not to say that the bipartisan consensus that governed U.S. foreign policy for many years was always right, but at the very least, countries could be fairly sure that there wouldn't be major changes from one party's president to another. Donald Trump, in pulling out of the JCPOA, doing away with a bunch of arms control agreements, has kind of proven that to not be the case. And so I think while a lot of countries are going to welcome Biden, it may be very difficult for his administration to make inroads on, say, new agreements on arms control or climate, just because other countries are going to be very wary of the fact that things could just change again in 4 years' time.
Going back to you, James Goldgeier, picking up on what Emma said in terms of the partisan nature of some of these issues, let's assume that the Senate will remain in Republican hands, even if narrowly. It's also possible that the Democrats could control. We'll have to wait for those two runoff elections in January in Georgia. But what is the role of the Senate in particular with respect to foreign policy? And could that, if the Senate remains in Republican hands, hamstring in any way President Biden, or also the executive branch has quite a bit of leeway with respect to foreign policy?
The president is heavily unconstrained. I mean, presidents over time, over the last 30, 40 years, have become increasingly unconstrained in foreign policy. And we just saw that with Donald Trump. As Emma pointed out, you know, he walked away from the Iran nuclear deal that Obama had forged. He's walked away from arms control treaties that both parties have supported, the Paris Climate Accords, Trans-Pacific Partnership. You know, he showed how powerful the president is. And as she pointed out, you know, this is a problem, because if you're going to convince other countries that you have policies that can last, outlast your presidency, you do have to figure out some way of creating a sense that there will be continuity. And that's pretty hard unless there is more of a congressional role. He will be able to work more easily with the Congress on foreign policy than on domestic issues. Domestic issues are going to be very hard to pass any ambitious legislation, issues like healthcare legislation. If the Republicans do control the Senate, it's going to be really tough. But let's take an issue like NATO, the U.S. alliance with Europe, security alliance with Europe. This has strong bipartisan support. Donald Trump was the outlier. People who worked for him have said that they would have expected him in his second term to withdraw the United States from NATO. That's not the position on Capitol Hill among Democrats or Republicans, and the broader public supports the NATO alliance. So I think that, you know, in issues like NATO and issues like China, there is bipartisan support for being tough on China. And so I think we'll see a lot of issues cast in that light. How do they help the United States improve in its competition with China? And there, I think the big challenge is going to be avoiding an overreaction to the role that China can play in the world. But I expect the tough on China to appear a lot in both domestic and foreign policy as a way to garner support.
We'll have more in just a moment. But first, you're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. Our guests are James Goldgeier. He's Senior Visiting Fellow at the Center on the United States and Europe at the Brookings Institution, from whom you just heard, and Emma Ashford, resident fellow with the New American Engagement Initiative in the Scowcroft Center for Strategy and Security at the Atlantic Council. And both of them join me via Microsoft Teams as we continue to practice social distancing. We are discussing how U.S. foreign policy may shift under a Biden administration. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel VOA. Well, here's a big shout out to a loyal fan and a Facebook follower, Samilula Kasimi from Kabul, Afghanistan. As always, if you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to our discussion. And of course, I invoked Afghanistan, but I will get to that in a minute. But since we're on China, let's go to that. So back to you, Emma Ashford, with respect to China. Biden has said that he wants to be tough on China, but I get the impression that while he and Mr. Trump and a lot of people agree with the end that we need to restrain China and make it follow the rules of the road, try to get it to stop violating human rights, et cetera, I get the impression that there'll be a different approach working with allies. How do you see that, working to combat China's actions on the world stage?
I think that a Biden administration would pursue slightly different means in taking a fairly confrontational approach to China. But I do think that what Jim said earlier, that a Biden administration may well continue many of the policies of the Trump administration.
Tariffs, you think?
So perhaps. I think it's possible we might see some of those tariffs phased out, particularly the ones that have not been particularly effective. But again, I wouldn't rule out a Biden administration continuing with some of those. And to the extent that we see differences, it may be largely rhetorical. I think it's really important to remember that during the Trump administration, we didn't really have a coherent set of foreign policies emanating from the administration. There was the president himself and a lot of the same things he said and did and tweeted. And then there was sort of the administration level below him, which was a much more consistently hawkish line towards authoritarian states, whether it was China, whether it was Russia. And so in a Biden administration, I think we are going to see sort of a through flow of some of those more hawkish tendencies, particularly towards China and perhaps to some extent towards Russia, even as we see Biden and change the rhetoric from the top about how great American alliances are, American leadership being back. So this may end up being as much a rhetorical shift as a real one.
Let's turn now to Russia. President Trump has a strange relationship with Vladimir Putin. Some call it a bromance. He has rarely spoken ill of the autocrat who has no compunction about poisoning his enemies, killing them in the shadow of the Kremlin. How do you think that relationship will change, particularly as Russia continues to be involved in eastern Ukraine? We have the standoff in Belarus, the poisoning of opponents, and of course, Russia's tentacles into Syria. How will that relationship change?
I think, again, we're going to see some continuity from the Trump administration, particularly in terms of the sanctions that have continued throughout the Trump administration, particularly in terms of things like the Trump administration actually supplied lethal weaponry to Ukrainians. So I don't see major changes there. I do see a return to the Obama-style rhetoric on Russia, at least post-2014 Russia, with regard to what it's doing in Syria, with regard to what it's doing in Eastern Europe. But I do think there's one additional area that could actually be quite interesting, where we might see some more actually conciliatory moves towards Russia, and that's on arms control. The Trump administration has largely been unwilling to even particularly talk to the Russians. Obviously, we withdrew from one arms control treaty. They haven't really agreed about extending the New START treaty that's up shortly after the new year starts. But in a Biden administration, I suspect there will be a lot more concern for arms control. So that is an area where we could actually see some fruitful conversations between the U.S. and Russia on an issue of serious mutual concern. And if you look at what a lot of Russia specialists from across the Washington political spectrum are saying, there's a lot of pressure to try and at least restart a dialogue with Russia that has been lacking during the Trump administration, to try and at the very least move past the sort of open hostility that we've had for quite a few years now.
James Goldgar, how do you see the U.S.-Russia relationship, especially with respect to arms control and in terms of trying to at least push back on Russia's attempts to undermine NATO and undermine the transatlantic alliance, which some critics say Mr. Trump didn't do much toward thwarting?
So arms control is going to be important for the Biden administration in a way that it wasn't for the Trump administration. And as Emma pointed out, you have a New START treaty that currently expires on February 5th. And so Biden will be inaugurated on January 20th. So first order of business is the extension of New START. And then, you know, follow-on agreements are really looking at continuing to reduce the overall level of nuclear warheads. And there are also other agreements that Trump left that the United States has to sort of figure out how to restart a dialogue with Russia. But, you know, the one issue that we haven't heard much about and that I think President Biden's going to want to do something about is response to Russian election interference in the United States in 2016, 2018, and 2020. I mean, you know, he will have won in spite of it. He will become president. But does he just move on? I don't think he can just move on. I think he's got to sort of figure out what's the policy to try to deter this kind of activity in the future and what costs should be imposed on the Russians for having engaged in this behavior. And, you know, you point out Putin efforts to undermine NATO, which were facilitated by Trump's own efforts to undermine NATO. So it'll be harder for Putin to undermine NATO with a president of the United States who cares about NATO and who cares about the transatlantic relationship as much as any president since George H.W. Bush. That's the last time we had a president with this kind of strong feeling about the transatlantic relationship. The other question, there's been in Biden's writings previously some discussion of the need to combat corruption worldwide and to increase transparency, and that corruption is really a problem for the democracies in Europe and the United States. And a lot of that is Russian money. Of course, a lot of questions have been raised about their ties to Donald Trump. There's a lot of Russian money floating around in Europe. So that'll be an interesting thing to watch for. How do they go about dealing with the issue of corruption, which would have quite an impact on Putin's Russia?
That's a very good point. And we could devote a whole program to that. Maybe we will soon. But let me get back to Emma. And let's do a bit of a lightning round because we don't have a lot more time. One of the things I wanted to ask you vis-a-vis China, what about the Trans-Pacific Partnership under the Obama-Biden administration? This was considered a bulwark against China's trade activities and activities in the region. But again, Mr. Trump, wanting to undo everything that his predecessor did, withdrew from that. Do you see the United States re-entering the Trans-Pacific Partnership as a part of a way to fight against China's unfair practices and nefarious activities in the South and the East China Seas?
I think it's pretty unlikely that a Biden administration is going to return to the TPP, at least anytime soon. One problem here is just rooted in domestic politics. The Democratic base, just like the Republican base, is no longer a fan of free trade. And while polling now shows that a lot of Americans say they find free trade important, there are fairly strong currents within the Democratic Party that would push back against any attempt to try and get the U.S. back into TPP or TTIP or any of the other sort of trade treaties that have been suggested as a way to bolster American alliances. So it's looking like opposition to free trade, or at the very least, no progress on improving free trade, is going to be another one of those areas that's fairly continuous between the Trump administration and the Biden administration.
How do you see it, Jim Goldgeier? I mean, once again, there's a lot of disinformation or misinformation out there with respect to, for example, a trade agreement like the TPP. We're looking at an alliance with 11 other countries as a way to fight China's unfair practices. Even that type of narrative, that do you think Biden might go back into that and try to re-explain to the American people? I think the Democrats as well as the Republicans might go along with it.
Well, as Emma's indicating, it's just hard to do that with all the other things on the table. I mean, to expend political capital trying to get that done. You're right that this was a great strategic idea, forming the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It made economic sense. It made strategic sense in the context of the competition from China. It's really unfortunate that Donald Trump decided that he wasn't interested because it was forged under the Obama-Biden administration. But how do you bring something like that back early on when you've got so many other issues to deal with? Joe Biden has to focus first and foremost on COVID, and that includes measures to get the virus under control. And then if there is a vaccine, to ensure that there's safe distribution of that vaccine to the American population. And also he's got an economy that he needs to jumpstart. So the pandemic and the economy are going to be the focus, and other issues where, for example, he and his team might be thrilled at the idea of being back in an agreement like TPP that the Obama-Biden administration had forged, it's just going to be difficult to do that anytime soon, given the nature of the politics in Washington and the need to address other issues first.
And you're absolutely right with respect to priorities. We have many other regions to cover, but we're going to have to wait for another time, whether it's the Middle East or Africa, Latin America. We don't want to give them a short shrift. So as we close, let me ask you, James Goldgar, about the architecture of diplomacy. We have witnessed under President Trump certainly a whittling of the, you know, State Department, a lack of concern about training future diplomats, I believe. But I'd like you to tell us how you see a President-elect Biden restoring the architecture of diplomacy and building up our diplomatic corps and how important that will be in effect.
It's going to be hugely important. It's going to take a long time. I mean, Donald Trump assaulted our government agencies, our career officials. You've had people leaving in droves. And while there will be a lot of people who go into government and do public service, including lots of our graduates from the School of International Service at American University, this is going to take a long time to do this kind of rebuilding. And it's really, it's frightening what has happened in the last 4 years with the effort to go after people who are trying to provide effective governance in the United States and carry out successful diplomacy. And, you know, I hope we'll never see anything again like it.
So, Emma Ashford, you get the last word with respect to how much of a priority you think President-elect Biden will have, notwithstanding he has to deal with COVID, major crises, economic crises. But I assume he will want to restore our diplomatic corps. And how important will that be, since he does talk about, unless we have a strong democracy at home and values that amplify that, we won't be much of an influence in the world anyway?
I think it's going to be a fairly high priority for the administration in foreign policy. I mean, as we've all talked about, there are plenty of other areas that require political capital. But I do think that there's been a lot of interest in the Democratic Party during the campaign, during the primary, in this idea of sort of rebuilding the State Department, rebuilding the tools of American diplomacy. That said, it's going to be difficult. It's going to be difficult because the way budgetary incentives are set up, the way that Congress handles these things and handles oversight, the incentive very much is to funnel money towards the military rather than towards the State Department or other sort of civil service forms of diplomacy and outreach. And I think it's going to be very hard to overcome those inclinations built into the system, particularly when we're talking about the most likely outcome of being split governance here, a Republican Senate and a Biden White House.
On the other hand, quickly, Jim, you know, Republicans have traditionally been very much in favor of a strong diplomacy. If they go back to the values that used to undergird the Republican Party until Mr. Trump came along and sort of changed some of those priorities, one would think that the Republican Party would want this type of budget item to rebuild the State Department.
Well, one would think, but it's still Trump's Republican Party. I don't see that changing anytime soon.
And nor do you, Emma. Do you see, you know, that the party has changed now fairly significantly and there's no going back?
I think it's notable that during the last 4 years, the main times when we have seen Senate Republicans in particular go against Trump have almost all involved foreign policy. They've almost all involved times when they felt Trump was being insufficiently hawkish or being mean towards allies. And so I think, you know, that's just an incredible display of how important this is to Senate Republicans, how important it is to their identity that they were actually willing to speak out against Trump on these issues when they did not speak out against him on everything from impeachment to election meddling.
And I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guest, James Goldgar. He's Senior Visiting Fellow at the Center on the United States and Europe at the Brookings Institution, and Emma Ashford, resident fellow with the New American Engagement Initiative at the Scowcroft Center for Strategy and Security at the Atlantic Council. Thanks so much to both of you for a great conversation, and we will keep it going. Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Gary Jaffe and Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.
sex.